From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, a tribute to composer UB Blake, best known for his songs I'm Just Wild About Harry and Memories of You. We'll be joined by singer Vernell Bonnerice and pianist Dick Hyman, who will revive some of Blake's forgotten songs. And theater historian Robert Kimball will tell us about what Blake faced as an African-American writing for Broadway in the 1920s and 30s. Right now, we're listening to a UB Blake piano roll of I'm Just Wild About Harry. The songs of UB Blake coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. President Clinton says he has no option but to impose sanctions on Pakistan because it carried out 5 nuclear tests today. A short time ago, Mr. Clinton expressed his deep regret over Pakistan's choice.
Pakistan lost a truly priceless opportunity to strengthen its own security, to improve its political standing in the eyes of the world. And although Pakistan was not the first to test, two wrongs don't make a right.
Pakistani officials say they set off the tests in response to rival India's 5 nuclear tests detonated 2 weeks ago. Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif says his country has finally settled its score with India. He blamed other world governments for failing to punish India more harshly. That failure, he said, led to Pakistan's decision to enter the nuclear age. Meanwhile, India says the Pakistani nuclear tests confirm its long-held suspicions that Pakistan had nuclear ambitions. India's prime minister said India's nuclear stand has been vindicated. Veer Singh reports from New Delhi.
Reacting to news of Pakistan's tests, Prime Minister Atal Bihari Vajpayee said they vindicate India's decision to go nuclear. News of the tests caused an uproar in parliament, where lawmakers were debating India's future nuclear course. Among them, a proposal to sign a no-first-use agreement with Pakistan. Addressing Parliament yesterday, Vajpayee cited what he called the deteriorating security environment around India as a reason for the country's recent nuclear tests. Opposition parties strongly disagreed with the Prime Minister's reasoning. Today's tests have strengthened his argument about a nuclear threat to India from neighboring Pakistan. For NPR News, I'm Veer Singh in New Delhi.
Former White House intern Monica Lewinsky has arrived at a federal building in Los Angeles to give Whitewater prosecutors samples of her handwriting, fingerprints, and voice. She was accompanied by her father, Dr. Bernard Lewinsky, who angrily told reporters his daughter is a pawn of prosecutor Kenneth Starr. Lewinsky's attorney, William Ginsburg, has written a letter to a legal magazine accusing Starr of ruining his client's life and that of her family for no purpose. Starr's investigating charges President Clinton had an affair with Lewinsky and asked her to lie about it. A new survey by the Hazelden Foundation finds parents may be giving mixed signals to their children about alcohol and drug use. The poll found that less than a quarter of parents say they forbid their children from drinking before reaching the legal age. Instead, parents are telling their children they prefer they not drink, but want them to call home if their child does anyway. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up nearly 18 points at 8,954 in active trading. The Nasdaq is up more than 9 at 1790. This is NPR. In NPR's business update, Wall Street investors are probably a little happier today. After yesterday's big ups and downs, stocks have stabilized somewhat, NPR's Jack Spear reports.
While stocks have been bouncing around a little today, by and large, things are a lot calmer both in New York and on many of the overseas markets. Stocks rose in Tokyo amid signs of further strengthening of the yen. Russian stocks also gained some ground on comments from Russian President Boris Yeltsin today that the country's economy isn't spinning out of control. On the domestic front, the Commerce Department reports the nation's gross domestic product grew at a 4.8% annual rate during the first 3 months of this year. GDP is the total measure of goods and services moving through the economy. Jack Spear, NPR News, Washington.
Russian President Boris Yeltsin is trying to reassure frightened investors today that the Russian financial crisis won't spread. Russian markets rebounded well over 5.5% today on his remarks. Yeltsin told the country that Russia's financial market will not collapse because the Russian central bank has enough reserves to control the problem. He also announced the Russian currency, the ruble, will not be devalued. The biggest worry facing the Yeltsin government is that the ruble will collapse, sparking steep price increases. Air France is warning that it will cancel between 75 and 90% of its flights between June 1st and June 4th because of a pilot strike. The French carrier says it'll keep 10% of its longest flights, a quarter of its medium-length flights, and 17% of its shorter flights. The cancellations could affect the start of the World Cup, the global soccer tournament. The series begins June 10th. I'm Korva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Borders Books and Music, offering a world to explore through books and music. Location information, 800-644-7733.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The song is Memories of You, one of the best-known melodies composed by UB Blake. At the piano is Dick Hyman, who's joining us today with singer Vernell Bonnerice. They're going to revive some of UB Blake's wonderful but largely forgotten songs. Some of the songs we're going to hear come from Blake's 1921 musical, Shuffle Along. That show not only left us with great music, it changed Broadway. Shuffle Along was created by and starred African Americans. It brought new syncopated rhythms and dances to Broadway and even helped launch the Harlem Renaissance. Here to tell us about the impact of UB Blake's work and the obstacles Blake faced as an African American composer is theater historian Robert Kimball. He helped rediscover Blake in the late 60s and co-authored the book Reminiscing with Sissel and Blake. Kimball is also the co-author of The Gershwins and editor of the complete lyrics of Ira Gershwin and Cole Porter. Let me tell you more about our guest performers. Singer Vernell Bonnerice is currently appearing on Broadway in the musical The Life. He also co-created and starred in a Jelly Roll Morton review and the New Orleans music review One More Time. Dick Hyman is an expert in the piano styles of the teens, 20s, and 30s. You may know him as the composer and music director for several Woody Allen movies. UB Blake not only wrote for musicals, he wrote for vaudeville. Let's start with one of his vaudeville songs written with lyricist Noble Sissel.
You can say what you choose, I've got the darndest blues that any lovebirdie ever had. Believe me, I got 'em bad. For since my sweetie went away, why then both night and day, all I could say is I wonder where my sweetie can be. I wonder why she ever quit me. I wonder who could have loved her more than I, or made her think they thought more of her. I wonder when she quit me, and then I wonder what I did that caused me to lose. I wonder with who she up and flew. I wonder what he has got and what I have not, and then I wonder if she ever wonders of me. I wonder where my sweetie can be. My sweetie can be. I wonder why she ever left me. I wonder who could have loved her more than I, or made her think they thought more of her. I wonder when she quit me, and then I wonder what I did that caused me to lose. Now I thought that I was a real Romeo, but this other guy's got some tricks I don't know. And then I wonder if she ever wonders of me. I wonder where my sweetie can be.
Great.
Wow.
Now, we're all here because we love UB Blake's songs. So I'd like to just go around the room and ask everybody why they love the songs. Vernell, let's start with you.
Well, for me, the melody lines are pretty much where I like music to be. It's melodious, and the lyrics are great and a lot of fun. And I love vaudeville, period, so...
Yeah, I know, and you're great at it. There's not that many people now who can sing that material. Dick Hyman, what do you love about UB Blake songs?
Well, I guess that he's really a stride piano player at his core, and that his songs seem to come out of that kind of piano playing, which I'm very fond of.
And which you're very good at.
Thank you.
And Robert Kimball, you rediscovered UB Blake in the late 60s. What do you love about his songs?
I think UB really bridged the gap between the European song tradition and the American, in the sense that he loved operetta. He loved Lehár. He loved composers like Tchaikovsky. His idol was Leslie Stewart. And he felt that it should be possible for an African-American to write any kind of song. And he did it. And I think his range is extraordinary, and his ability to use accent in songs, which he could do as a conductor, he learned how to do all of those things, makes his songs very, very exciting for us.
Tell us a little bit about him biographically, where he was from.
UB Blake was born in Baltimore on February the 7th, 1883. He was the son of slaves. In fact, his father had 21 children by two wives. UB was the only one of the 21 children to live to adulthood.
Not only did he live to adulthood, how old was he when he died?
100 years and 5 days.
Amazing. some of the songs we'll be hearing today are from Shuffle Along, UB Blake's 1921 musical written with Noble Sissel. And this is really a landmark musical in the history of the Broadway stage. Robert Kimball, what's so important about Shuffle Along musically?
Shuffle Along described itself accurately as a musical mélange. It brought together so many diverse styles and influences. You hear operetta in a song like Love Will Find a Way. Very important, and it was a very courageous decision for Sissel and Blake to have a beautiful ballad that could have come right out of a Jerome Kern show as part of their score. It also reflected the vaudeville acts of the four creators, Miller and Lyles, who were the book writers of Shuffle Along. Later, Miller became particularly well known for writing the Amos and Andy routines. But Miller and Lyles had these wonderful sketches that they did together, and it was their comic routines that provided the basis for the books that they wrote for Shuffle Along and other musicals of that period. And then you had Sissel and Blake's remarkable vaudeville act, which was really crucial. And it was an extended 15 or 20-minute sequence which would involve a diversity of materials. And it was the coming together of all these different influences that made Shuffle Along special. Another part about Shuffle Along that has always struck me very forcefully is that because there were no other black musicals on Broadway, when they gathered the talent together to bring Shuffle Along to Broadway, they were able to obtain the very best talent in the black community.
Who are some of the people who come out of Shuffle Along?
We think of, certainly, well, one person who you don't think of was Paul Robeson. He was a member of the cast of Shuffle Along. The most beloved of the black artists of the 20s, Florence Mills, was from Shuffle Along. Many ways, the most famous of performers from that period, who later went on to achieve great renown in Europe, was Josephine Baker. She was from Shuffle Along. Two great figures in music played in UB's orchestra, Hall Johnson, whose choir was world-renowned, and the extraordinary composer William Grant Still played the oboe in the Shuffle Along Orchestra. These are just some of the great people who were part of that show.
For now, Dick, I'm going to ask you to do a song from Shuffle Along. This is called I'm Craving for That Kind of Love. It was the showstopper of the musical. You want to do it for us?
It'll be great.
Great.
Wishing and fishing and trying to hook someone sweet like you'd meet in a book. I'll be her Romeo. I won't be no phonio. She may be the baby of some other guy. I'll take him and make him say bye-bye. And when I get her, I will set her upon my knee and make my plea to kiss me, kiss me, kiss me with her tempting lips. Sweet as honey drips, press me, press me, press me to her loving breast. While I gently rest, breathe love's tender sighs. While I gaze, let me gaze into her eyes. Eyes that will just hypnotize. Then I know she'll whisper, whisper, whisper to me soft and low. Something nice, you know, honey, 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 when there's no one near. My baby dear, she'll say, huddle me, cuddle me, cling to me, sing to me, spoon to me, croon to me, sigh to me, cry to me. I'm craving for that kind of love. Kiss me with a tempting lips, sweeter than honey drips. Whisper something soft and low, whisper something nice, you know. Huddle me, cuddle me, cling to me, sing to me, spoon to me, croon to me, sigh to me, cry to me. And I'm craving for that kind of love.
That's a really fun song. Now, when that song was sung in Shuffle Along in 1921, it was done by someone named Gertrude Saunders. And what an unusual style she had of singing. I thought maybe we'd listen to a little bit of that 1921 recording and hear how it sounded back then in her voice. Why don't we give that a spin? It's from 1921, Gertrude Saunders. That's an amazing style of singing. I mean, it's this really odd combination of this operatic style and syncopation. Is this something brand new happening in this kind of singing?
She's also got an element of sort of like a blues shouter in
there too. Yes,
so it's the beginning, of course, of the recordings. I believe Bessie Smith had just started to record at that time, and you're having this great infusion of artists with that tradition as well, as, again, very classically trained.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the bringing together of these incredible styles, plus some extraordinarily vocal embellishments, that the use of portamento and things that we just don't hear anymore.
What influence did Shuffle Along have on other Broadway musicals? As we were saying, you know, it brings this kind of mix of an light opera sound and ragtime and syncopation.
I would think musically, and knowing from what I've heard from Irving Berlin and others, that Mr. Berlin said that the impact of Shuffle Along was extraordinary, and that it's no question that the kind of syncopated songs that he wrote after, like Everybody's Step and Pack Up Your Sins and Go to the Devil, which were for the Music Box Reviews, were influenced by songs like The Baltimore Buzz, Craving for That Kind of Love, which he heard in Shuffle Along. It's hard to imagine Gershwin's fascinating rhythm without hearing what Cecil and Blake were doing before.
We'll talk more about composer U.B. Blake and hear more of his songs after a break. This is Fresh Air.
Back to our tribute to composer U.B. Blake. My guests are singer Vernell Bonnaries, pianist Dick Hyman, and theater historian Robert Kimball.
One of the things I find so interesting about this period of U.B. Blake's music is that you have this constant cross-influence of black and white influences, because you have Gershwin in Berlin picking up on what Blake is doing, but you also have U.B. Blake being very inspired by operatic, kind of light opera composers like Leslie Stewart, who's British, and Victor Herbert. So it's this constant cross-influence. It's the influences don't just go one way.
U.B. felt that this was the way it should be, and he said it was very difficult for black artists to write in styles that are associated with the white culture, the high culture. And so originally, I'm Just Wild About Harry, the most famous song from Shuffle Along was a waltz. And Lottie G, the leading lady of Shuffle Along, said, U.B., you can't have a waltz in a colored show. You have to make it a one-step. And so he made the change. He said he didn't want to make the change, but of course she was right, he said, given what happened with the song. But it was his wish to be able to write any kind of music he wanted. And it was very hard for him to be able to do that because of these expectations. And I think with Love Will Find a Way, the ballad, they were all terrified.
You know, you mentioned that Just Wild About Harry was originally done as a waltz, and that wasn't considered, you know, a kind of a black form. So he changed it to, what, a one-step? Can you play it for us both ways, Dick? Just a few bars
of each? Well,
sure.
The way that we generally play it is... If you were to play it as a waltz, it would be...
Right. And, you know, during the period that U.B. Blake starts writing, a lot of African-American performers are still performing in blackface. And when Sisler and Blake were starting off with their vaudeville act, did they ever perform in blackface? Were they expected to do that?
They wouldn't do it. They didn't do it. And the reason they were able to achieve that was because they had both worked very closely with James Reese Europe. They were part of his musical aggregate. U.B. was a pianist and a leader for some of the Europe bands that performed, and Sisler was a vocalist. And they performed a great deal in the homes of millionaires. And they were always expected to dress properly, respectfully, and at times formally. And they felt that for their audience, they must dress the same way when they performed on the vaudeville stage.
So they just say no if people expected them?
They said no.
There's a song I'm going to ask you to do for Nell and Dick from Shuffle Along called If You've Never Been Vamped by a Brown Skin, You've Never Been Vamped Before. And when we were thinking of including this song in our show today, a couple of people said, well, maybe you don't want to sing that song because, you know, the lyrics might sound stereotyped or offensive to contemporary ears. And Vernell, what's your take on that?
I think that Noble Sissel and U.B. Blake were extremely careful themselves about how they would represent themselves to their audience. So I don't have a problem with that. Other musical material from the period, when you say donkeys beat the feet on the Mississippi, then I change it to people beat the feet on the Mississippi, and I do the number. A lot of African-American artists won't even touch the material once they see a lyric. I prefer to see if the lyric can be doctored in some way and then present this wonderful song and not lose the material.
Well, why don't we hear the song? Okay. This is from Shuffle Along, the 1921 musical by U.B. Blake and Noble Sissel. We have Dick Hyman at the piano, Vernell Bonnaries singing.
Now Deacon Birch of Mount Zion Church was hauled up into court. He was brought in by his wife, I think, and charged with non-support. A sealskin brown with jet black hair caused Deke to lose his head. And when the judge called Deke to speak, these are the words he said. Your Honor, if you've never been vamped by a brown skin, you've never been vamped at all. Well, a vampin' is vamp is a brown skin, and believe me, Judge, that ain't no stall. A high brown gal will make you break out of jail. A chocolate brown will make a tadpole smack a whale. A pretty sealskin brown, I mean one long and tall, would make the silent sphinx out in the desert ball. If you've never been vamped by a brown skin judge, you've never been vamped at all. Break out of jail. A chocolate brown will make a tadpole smack a whale. A pretty sealskin brown, I mean one long and tall, would make the silent sphinx out in the desert ball. If you've never been vamped by a brown skin judge, you've never been vamped at all. Oh, you never been vamped at all. I arrest myself.
Oh, that's great. Now, Vernell, I know you actually met UB Blake.
Yeah, when I was doing One More Time.
Your New Orleans musical.
Yeah.
Did he share any good stories with you?
Well, not so much stories as much as helped me to face what later on I would get nationally with the press.
What do you mean?
He'd come down to New Orleans to see the show when we were actually in our original workshop period mm-hmm. with it before we opened in New York. And I asked him about the blackface because I knew that he had personally refused to appear in blackface. And he was saying that when you're doing an authentic piece about the TOBA circuit, that
was like the Black Minstrel and Vaudeville circuit.
Yes, the Theater Owners Booking Association's mm-hmm, mm-hmm. circuit of mm-hmm. a colored vaudeville, that the truth is that the majority, 99% of the performers would have to have that moment. And so tell the truth was his thing. You know, if you're going to do a historic piece, you want to paint it as clearly and as purely as you can. So that was a big help for me to have a man who, to me, was such a legend, 96 years old at the time, watching a show and saying, this feels good. This feels like this is the truth, and it feels like you haven't painted it bleached it out of commission.
We'll continue our tribute to composer UB Blake in the second half of our show with guests Vernell Bonnarice, Dick Hyman, and Robert Kimball. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Today's program on UB Blake is made possible with a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. Funding for Fresh Air is provided by this and other NPR member stations and by Barnes & Noble, bookseller since 1873. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, we continue our tribute to composer UB Blake. We're listening to a piano roll recorded by UB Blake of his 1921 song, The Goodfellow Blues.
Thank you.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with more of our tribute to UB Blake. Joining us are singer Vernell Bonnerice, pianist Dick Hyman, and theater historian Robert Kimball. Now, another interesting thing about UB Blake and the period that he starts performing in, it's a period when African-American composers are starting to organize through, James Reese Europe, probably the most famous African-American conductor of his time, and he died, I think it was in 1919. Yeah. He organized something called the Clef Club, which I guess was the first black musicians' union. Robert Kimball, you want to say a few, just a little bit about the kind of organizing that's happening in the African-American music world in New York at about the time of Shuffle Along?
Well, you had the theatrical organization called the Frogs, which included virtually all of the writers who were writing for the musical stage, both lyricists and composers. And that was a kind of a fraternal organization. So these groups were organizing. And I think probably the crucial factor that, in addition to all of that, that changed the feelings at the time was World War I. And World War I broke down some of the old racial lines, because the black soldiers were fighting, and Jim Europe formed this tremendous band, which achieved renown in Europe, and he brought it back to the United States, and indeed it was really a triumphant expression of unity and well, a sort of oneness with the American experience.
One of the many interesting things about Shuffle Along is that it relates to the Harlem Renaissance. In fact, Langston Hughes says that the reason why he came to New York and went to Columbia University is because he really wanted to see Shuffle Along. And in fact, let me quote something that Langston Hughes wrote about Shuffle Along and its importance to the Harlem Renaissance, which we think of as being largely a literary renaissance. Langston Hughes wrote, "Certainly it was the musical review Shuffle Along that gave a scintillating send-off to that Negro vogue in Manhattan. Everybody was in the audience, including me. It gave just the proper push, a pre-Charleston kick, to that Negro vogue of the 20s that spread to books, African sculpture, music, and dancing." You know, after reading that, I wanted to hear more about the Harlem Renaissance and its connection to Shuffle Along. So we actually invited an expert on the Harlem Renaissance, David Levering Lewis, to talk about it. He wrote the book When Harlem Was in Vogue about the Renaissance, and he won a Pulitzer for his biography of W.E.B. Du Bois. He holds the Martin Luther King Chair in History at Rutgers University. And he told me that another music event that helped launch the Harlem Renaissance was a victory parade in 1919 after World War I, in which the most famous African-American conductor of the day, James Reese Europe, led his 369th U.S. Infantry Hellfighters Band through Manhattan. Noble Sissel had helped him organize this band and had been the drum major overseas. UB Blake was a close friend of Europe's. So I asked Lewis about the importance of this victory parade.
The march that James Reese Europe led from Washington Square straight up the spine of Manhattan into Harlem was the victory parade of the returning 369th Infantry Regiment, perhaps the most highly decorated infantry regiment, American regiment, participating in the hostilities of World War I. The symbolism of that march, with all of New York turned out, white and black, troops covered with confetti, by the time they reached 125th Street, each soldier had a damsel on his arm. The symbolism of that march was that jazz was marching into the American scene with a vengeance.
Where did the African American intellectuals of the 20s see art and music as fitting into the larger civil rights struggle?
A small and pretty astute group decided that the most innocuous way to push for civil rights was through arts and culture. I think they thought that if it can be shown that some of the best literature, some of the best poetry, some of the most intriguing art is produced by African Americans, with all the presumptions of semi-literacy and the Freudian business, if that could be achieved, then one would slap down the presumptions of inferiority. No, it was, I think you would have to concede, a deeply elitist idea, a deeply elitist strategy, that if we get 30 or 40 first-rate writers and poets, mostly in New York, we're going to have a civil rights revolution. And that is grossly to oversimplify what they anticipated, but it does get the gist of the civil rights agenda.
Do you have a favorite U.B. Blake song or one that has stuck with you?
I guess I would say I would select Love Will Find a Way. It's charming, it's lilting, it's simple, and it shows Blake early on at his craft at the top of it.
David Levering Lewis, thank you very much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
David Levering Lewis is the author of When Harlem Was in Vogue. I have to say, Love Will Find a Way is one of my favorite songs of U.B. Blake's, too. It was a love ballad in the musical Shuffle Along, and I think it was also Cecil and Blake's theme song in their act. So I thought maybe we could listen to a 1921 recording of Cecil and Blake performing this song.
Love will find a way.
That's really wonderful. We're talking about and reviving some of the music of U.B. Blake today. Joining me are singer Vernell Bonnaries, pianist Dick Hyman, and music theater historian Robert Kimball, who's the co-author of Reminiscing with Cecil and Blake. Robert Kimball, the song that we just heard, a love ballad, Love Will Find a Way, that was apparently a very radical song to include in a musical like Shuffle Along, which was a musical written and performed by African Americans. Why was it considered so radical to have a love ballad in a black musical?
Before Shuffle Along, when one black artist sang about love to another, it was usually done in a style burlesquing love. It was something that was supposed to not take place on the stage. So there was a great sense of foreboding that the authors of Shuffle Along felt when they decided to go ahead and put this song in their show, not only in it, but the main song of the show, the theme song of the show. And they, Cecil and Blake tell the story of opening night when Cecil, Miller, and Lyles were terribly worried about the reception that the song would receive. And they described themselves as having one foot in the door of the stage door to the theater, and one out in the alleyway getting ready to take off for Harlem, because they were sure that U.B. Blake was going to be pelted with fruit and vegetables by people who are angry at hearing a song like that in a colored show.
Was there a problem?
No, not at all. It was not at all a problem. It was a great song from the show and one that was sung and performed everywhere.
So did that open the door for it to just be accepted on stage?
Absolutely. The show, the song, everything opened the doors. It really said to all black Americans, not only in musical theater, but in all the arts, and this is why it's so closely associated with the Harlem Renaissance, that now anything is possible. We can do whatever we want to do. If we can break into this bastion where there had been segregation and difficulties for black artists to be heard, then we can try to write, to compose, and perform, and indeed they did. And so it became really a clarion call, and it gave opportunities, at least for a while, because it changed in the 30s. For black artists to be seen in shows on Broadway as a regular part of the Broadway experience.
We'll talk more about composer UB Blake and hear more of his songs after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back to our tribute to composer UB Blake, my guests are singer Vernell Bonnerice, pianist Dick Hyman, and theater historian Robert Kimball. Shuffle Along brought a lot of new syncopated rhythms to Broadway. And Dick, I thought maybe you could play one of UB Blake's most famous ragtime pieces and talk a little bit about what UB Blake's contribution to ragtime.
Well, UB Blake was one of the originals. He lived long enough, that's the remarkable thing, that he long outlived the age of ragtime, but he was there as a teenager at any rate. And the original date of Charleston rag was 1899, which would have made UB 15 or 16 years old. Interestingly enough, that piece was not known under that title at first. He recorded it in the early 1920s under the title Sounds of Africa. The form of Charleston rag, as almost all piano rags, is the same as the form of the march. There's a first theme, a second theme, a first theme again, and finally the third theme, which some people refer to as the trio. And sometimes with interludes in between. Charleston rag.
Thank you.
I bet that wasn't easy to learn. We're here reviving some of the great songs of UB Blake, and my guests are singer Vernell Bonnaris, pianist Dick Hyman, and theater historian Robert Kimball. After Shuffle Along, Sissel and Blake resumed their vaudeville act, took it to Europe. Meanwhile, on Broadway, Shuffle Along had helped launch a series of other music revues starring African Americans, and UB Blake ends up writing for one of those a few years later. And I'm thinking of the Blackbirds review of 1930. There was a series of musical reviews called Blackbirds of 1928, Blackbirds of 1930. And for the Blackbirds of 1930, he teamed up with Andy Razzaf, who had worked with Fats Waller, and some of the songs they wrote were Ain't Misbehavin' and Black and Blue and Honeysuckle Rose. And Vernell and Dick are going to do a song that comes out of Blackbirds of 1930. It's called You're Lucky to Me. I think it was Ethel Waters who originated this in the actual show. Vernell, Dick, you want to give this one a go?
That would be great.
Never since a child was I reconciled by the folks who laugh at boogaboos. Voodoo's haunted me, trailed me constantly, till the day you came my way like good news. Whenever you're near, all my fears disappear, dear. It's plain as can be, you're lucky to me. My only luck charms are your two loving arms. Anybody can see, you're lucky to me. No harm can happen to me anymore. I'm writing 13s all over my door. My mother and dad thought that my luck was bad. Now, like me, they agree, you're lucky to me.
A really contemporary sounding song,
yeah.
I think, you know, melodically. And in fact, you know, Barry Singer wrote a biography of Andy Razzaf, and in that book, Singer says that Razzaf said that some of the intervals in Lucky to Me were really innovative at the time, and that Ethel Waters particularly enjoyed the song, and that she said when she sang it, "I've never sung changes like that before." And Andy Razzaf said to her, "Neither has anyone else." Dick Hyman, what do you think is particularly innovative for its time about the intervals in that song?
Well, the harmonies that the intervals go with. That's wonderful, mm-hmm. And that's very untypical of that period.
We'll talk more about composer UB Blake and hear more of his songs after a break. This is Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Back to our tribute to composer Ubi Blake. My guests are singer Vernell Bonnerice, pianist Dick Hyman, and theater historian Robert Kimball. Robert Kimball, you rediscovered Ubi Blake and Noble Sissel in the late 1960s. How did you meet him? How did you find him?
I would say that I was one of the people who helped rediscover Ubi. It happened this way. I was at that time the curator of the Yale American Musical Theater Collection, and I was looking to build the archives in New Haven. And one day I was speaking to John Lahr, the writer, and he said, my father, his father Bert Lahr, the great actor-comedian, suggested that the very first people you should contact, were Noble Sissel and Ubi Blake. So actually it was Bert Lahr who arranged for John Lahr and myself to go up and meet Noble Sissel. And this would have been, I'm sure, in the spring of 1967. And we had visited Sissel. He told us maybe just weeks before he was going to throw out all his old files and his old materials.
Oh.
But he said no one is interested in them. There's no reason to keep them. And by this miracle, we were able to get there in time. We didn't know how close we were to losing this extraordinary heritage. Well, he said, if this interests you fellows, I'll call my old pal up and go out and visit him in Brooklyn. So he made a phone call, and he said, I have these two boys here who would like to meet you, and we could come out. So Sissel drove us out to 284 A. Stuyvesant Avenue, where Ubi and Marion Blake lived, as Ubi said, when he married Marion. I got the coop with the chicken. It was her house that he was moving into. And we were greeted there by Ubi. And the afternoon that I spent there was one of the most memorable in my life.
Dick Hyman, you knew Ubi Blake. Any good stories you want to share with us?
Well,
or any tips that he gave you about the piano?
Well, I visited him at the coop, as you say. We were putting together a show honoring Ubi's 100th birthday, which appeared on public television. And I think it was called, rightly enough, A Century of Music, Ubi Blake. And we went through his files of old material, and it seemed to me that he had written a song, at least one song a day for his entire life. There they were in his own hand, and we found a whole lot of things which we used on that show, including the song I'd Give a Dollar for a Dime, which Joe Williams reintroduced. I don't know if it had much of a history before that time. And since that time, it's been taken up by a number of singers. I think Joe's was the first performance.
That's a wonderful song. It would be one of the songs that I would make an argument really should be revived again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, this is a song I'd really like everybody to hear and to remember. I'd like to see it back in circulation. In fact, maybe you could start recirculating it
right
now. Would you do it for us, Vernell?
Yeah, great.
That little jukebox right over there is like a magic key, for it can take me anywhere on wings of memories. I'd give a dollar for a dime. I've got to hear that record play again. Turn love's December into May again. Bring me the thrill just one more time. I'd give a dollar for a dime, so I can hear that sweet refrain again, that carries me down lover's lane again. Back when the world was all in rhyme, it seems that song was written for us. Every word and note has charms. Our two hearts would sing the chorus as I held you in my arms. I'd give a dollar for a dime. My aching heart is on my sleeve again. To close my eyes and make believe again, I'd give a dollar for a dime. To play that record one more time.
What a great song. We've heard a lot of great songs today by UB Blake. And it's interesting, you know, right before he died, when he became celebrated with the help, Robert Kimball, of the book that you wrote and the shows that you worked on with him, his songs were kind of regaining popularity again. And then in the past few years, I feel like he's been forgotten all over again. So, you know, I'd love to hear more of his songs back in circulation. And I want to thank all of you for helping us bring back some of his songs on the show today. It's really been so pleasurable to hear them perform. Thank you, pianist Dick Hyman, singer Vanell Banerese, theater historian Robert Kimball. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Terry.
Our program on UB Blake was conceived, researched, and produced with project consultant Margaret Pick of Pacific Vista Productions, with assistance from Terry Bronson. It was recorded by engineer Mike DeMarc at the studios of WNYC in New York and edited by Fresh Air associate producer Tracy Tenenbaum. Our advising scholars were David Levering Lewis, Arnold Rampersad, Thomas Reese, Alan Wall, William Balcom, Joan Morris, and Robert Kimball. Thanks to WHYY's David Othmer, Anna Kassoff, Patricia Connolly, and Stacey Robinson. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. I'm Terry Gross.
Today's program on UB Blake was made possible with a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, a concert and interview with British singer-songwriter Nick Lowe. We're listening to music from his new CD. I'm Terry Gross. Join us.
It's time I took a holiday. Before I blow my top, I've got to kick my shoes.